Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yavam daf Kuf Beis. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf of Menlozech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We find ourselves right on the end of the 10th parak. Right at the end of the 11th parak. So, Nusa. Okay, we're at the end of the 11th parak, and we're going to rolling today, finish the 11th parak, and begin the 12th parak. Let's take a look back at our Gemara. The Mishnah, not going to reread the Mishnah, but the Mishnah gave us a number of scenarios where the woman did not wait the requisite three-month period that a woman normally needs to wait between men, and she only waited 2 months, and then she had a baby 7 months later. A classic scenario found in the Gemara in which we do not know whether or not this child is fathered by the first husband, the former husband, or the current husband. And as a result of that, it creates a tremendous amount of confusion. Confusion just in terms of the simple question of who the father is, but confusion in terms of who the brothers are, and whether or not there's a mitzvah of Yibam, or whether or not there's a Zika. And if the first husband was a Kohen and the second husband was a Yisrael, whether this child is a Kohen. And okay, so it creates a whole tremendous amount of confusion. So the Gemara starts off, Dafka Michlatz Vehadar Yivume. The Gemara is commenting over here on one of the scenarios that was pointed to earlier, where each man had other sons outside of this one, and so the former husband and the current husband both had other sons, and so therefore the question of this middle child now is this middle child a paternal brother to either the son of A or the son of B? The answer is he's a paternal brother to one of them. We just don't know which one. So what do you do? So one of the brothers will do chalitza and the other brother will do yibum. Again, what chalitza does is it just takes care of the yivam l'shuk, and that's exactly the point the Gemara makes. Dafka michlatz v'hada yivum yivum b'reish alo dekapaga b'yivam l'shuk. Okay, so the Gemara says, and this is a point that the Gemara has already reiterated a number of times, is that you specifically have to go in this order in order to make sure that the Yavam L'Shuk issue is attended to, and then the other brother may be doing the mitzvah of Yibam. And again, if he's not doing Yibam, that's fine, because then all he's doing is he's just marrying a woman. No, there are two cases in the Mishnah. One case in the Mishnah was exactly what you just described, where all three of them share the same mother. In that case, as the Mishnah pointed out, no one's going to be doing Yibam. In the next case in the Mishnah, where he fathers other children from different women, so then the only question now becomes, are they paternal brothers? Okay. Amar Shmuel, Asara Kohanim Omdim Epir Shechamehem Ubal Savlat Shesuki. You have 10 Kohanim, and one of the 10 Kohanim who is unidentified has relations with a woman and fathers a child. So the child is a Shesuki. Shesuki is the general term that we use throughout the Gemara that describes as somebody who is unable to identify his father. Now, my Shesuki, the Gemara says, okay, Ilem Shemashtikan Osam Minich Seaviv. So the Gemara says, okay, but what halachic ramifications does that have that this child is a Shesuki? So the Gemara says, first of all, maybe it has a connection to the fact that he's no longer entitled to the estate of his father. Because all the other brothers are going to say, look, you don't know for sure that he's the father. You're not going to get a portion of the estate. But the Gemara says, pshitim, yadin avu amanu. So the Gemara says, but of course, meaning that's a given. That's so posh, it's so obvious. The Gemara says, that's not even worth a discussion. So Elo shemashtikin oso midin kohuna. So the Gemara says, interesting, we don't know who the father is, but we know that of the candidates of who the father may be, one of them may actually be a Kohen. They're all Kohanim. So the Gemara says, he's not going to get din Kohen. My time, I'm a Rava. Sorry, Amakra va'isalo zara acharav beinan zara miyuchas acharav aleka. So the Gemara says, in order to have the rights of the Kohen, the status of the Kohen, you have to be able to identify your father, meaning a special halacha that it's not enough to know that you're a Kohen, but you have to know that you're a Kohen, son of so and so. So maskal v'rapapa lamiyata gabi avram dechsev liyos achal alukim lazaracha acharecha ha'isa hasan kam ma'zel erechmana. So the Gemara says, really interesting. So you're you're telling me that whenever you find a pasuk that seems to indicate that in order to have a status, you have to be able to identify your father. So what do we see in the going all the way back to Parshas Vayera? So what is the Torah trying to tell us that when Akash Baruch Hu says to Abraham, you know you're going to have children and the children are going to be they're going to be able to identify your father? Legabe relative to what halacha is that all about? So Hachi Kamalei. So the Gemara says no. That pasuk all the way back in Vayera is to be understood as follows. Lo tenasev avodas kochavim v'shimcha. Akash Baruch was telling Avraham Avinu, make sure that your children don't marry an idolater or a shivcha. Delalezol zarecha basra. Because what's going to happen is that obviously being that this woman's going to be one of the two parents, so she's going to have a heavy influence on the child and the child is going to follow after her. Okay, it only really begs the question. Avram went against exactly what was just instructed, meaning the instructions were not to marry an avodah zarah, not to avodas kochavim, not to marry shivcha. What does Avram do? Marries a shivcha. Okay, that's right. I guess the argument would go. The Gemara doesn't pursue this discussion any further. Maybe the argument can go that Hagar wasn't a shivcha per se. Maybe she had a different status. Maybe he did so because Sarah instructed him to do so. Okay, either way, Meitzvah, the Gemara once again challenges. Rishon Marlios and Gadol. So. Gemara is bothered by the fact that we've seen cases like this earlier in the Masechta, and one of the comments that Gemara made earlier is that despite the fact that he's unable to identify who his father is, but in other words, okay, even though he comes from murky roots, but as long as we know he's a Kohen, he could become a Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says, based on what we're saying right now, isn't that not correct? Gemara just doesn't understand. Didn't we just say in order to have the benefits of a Kohen, you have to be able to identify, it's not enough to know that you're a Kohen, but you have to be able to identify your father? So the Gemara says like this. This idea that you have to be able to identify your father, and your inability to identify your father is going to prevent you from all the status of the Kohanim. That's not a Din Daraisa. Gemara says it's a Gzeira Derabanan, part of the rabbinic decree, perhaps to maintain a certain level of integrity and pedigree of the Kohanic family. So the Gemara says, as far as that's concerned, Gemara says that it's really not a Din Daraisa. It's a Din Darabanan. V'chi Gaz Rabbanan b'znos, b'nisun lo Gaz Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, and when the rabbis made Xera, that's only as it relates to znos, but not as it relates to marriage. If it's znos, b'gaz Rabbanan v'atanan, mi shalo shasa achar bala shosha chadosh v'nisiz v'yalda. So the Gemara says, a woman doesn't wait 3 months, and she gets married and she has a child. So my achar bala. So the Gemara says, now what exactly did that mean over there in this Mishnah? Ile machar misas bala. So the Gemara says, are we talking about the death of her husband named Masefo? Honin alehem vehem onin in a love. Right. Clearly in the context of the Mishnah, he's not dead. The first husband's not dead. And we know that because the Mishnah says they are ma'anein over him. So clearly, there's the former husband still alive. So now, as far as the aninus of this child is concerned, this middle child, you can easily maintain. Easily, it's not so easy, but you can maintain that the former husband is dead and the current husband is still alive. How could it be an onen over somebody who already died? So the Gemara says likud atzamas. We know the minhag was back in those days that they would bury, and after a year they would inter the body. They would dig up the body and inter the bones, I should say, in a family plot. That was the minhag back then. And on the day of likud atzamas, so you're an onen. So the Gemara says easily one can imagine, now that you know that information, that this middle child can be an onen over his father who's already dead, and the current husband, or the other possible father. But that last line of the Mishnah where they're an onen over him, the only way the fathers can be an onen is only if they're both alive. So ve'ela begrusha. So the Gemara says, fine. So just from that alone, we know that our Mishnah is dealing with how did the marriage end with the first husband? Through gerushin. Umay achar bala, achar gebala. So the Gemara says, and when it says achar bala, it means after the divorce of the first husband. So ima seifa. So, I'm sorry. So just from that alone, the context of the Mishnah is not talking about Znos, it's talking about marriage. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, but look at the next part of the Mishnah, where it talks about they, the fathers, being metame for him, that middle child, and he, the middle child, being metame for the parents. As far as they, the fathers, not being metame for him, the Gemara says that I totally understand, because we don't know whose son he belongs to. So a Kohen cannot violate the Isra Torah of Tumas Meis if you don't know for sure that he's your son. The Gemara says that I understand. So the Gemara says, but let it be Matami for the first father and for the following reason. Look, if he's a son, great. That a son, Kohen, is allowed to be Matami for his father. Now, if he is not the son of the first father, he can be Matami for the first father. How does that work? So the Gemara says like this, right? Just map out the case in your mind. It means then that, again, we're assuming that the first father is still alive, and how did the marriage terminate between mom and the first husband? Through a divorce. And then that means that mom married another Kohen. Mom's a divorcee. What does that speak to about the child? The child is a halal. A halal is devoid of Kedushas Kahuna. So it's brilliant. I mean, it just simply works. Again, it's not pleasant, but it works. Either he is the son of the former husband, which means that he's a Kohen, and he's the son of that man, which means he's committed Matame for her, or the alternative is that he's a Ben Grusha. If he's a Ben Grusha, so he has not have Kedushas Kahuna. So either way, he could be Matame for the first husband. So El Allah business. So the Gemara says, Gemara says, it can't be that there was Gerushin in our Mishnah. It must be business. And it says Baal, husband, but it doesn't mean husband. It just simply means paramour. It's right. The second man just simply fathered a child. Viktani Seifa Ola B'Mishmar Shalzeh V'Shalzeh Utiyufta D'Shmuel, and it says that he can go to either Mishmar. In other words, he is still entitled to the rights and privileges of the Kohen, even though he can't identify who his father is. And the Gemara says this serves as a difficulty for Shmuel. The Gemara says that this halacha of Shmuel, that if you can't identify your father as a Kohen, you're not entitled to the rights and privileges of the father. So the way we've analyzed the Mishnah, the way we've now set up the Mishnah, comes out that the Mishnah is not talking about marriage, it's talking about Znos, and yet the Mishnah entertains the idea that that he is entitled to the rights and privileges of a Kohen. Fine. Amar Shmaya, so Rav Shmaya says, no, you don't have to say that. Meaning, let's defend Shmuel's halacha. That a Kohen, in order to enjoy the rights and privileges of being a Kohen, he has to be able to identify his father. And again, we'll say, like the Gemara said earlier, it's a Gzeira D'Rabbanan. Okay, it's a knas, if you will, a penalty. But in other words, you have to identify your father. So the Gemara says, what about our Mishnah? So Amar Shmaya ben Mamenes. The Gemara says our Mishnah could be talking about a woman who performed miyun. In other words, she annulled the marriage. Annulment of the marriage is in a very limited circumstance, which we've discussed time and again, where a girl gets married, she's married off by either her brother or by her mother. And so the marriage does not operate on a Doraisa level. The marriage only operates on a Durabana level. And at the age of 12, she can be Mamayin, she could do Miyun. Actually, there's a parak coming up later in the Masechta that's going to deal with this topic at length. So the Gemara says, Mamayin is Mikha Yalda. The Gemara says, okay, if we're dealing with Miyun, we're talking about a girl who's really young. Mm-hmm. Too young to mother a child. So the Gemara says, Vatani Rabbi Bikamed Rav Nachman, Shal Shashim Hashem Shas Bamoch. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Gemara quotes this Braisa a number of times throughout Shas. You see on the sign of the Gemara. We saw it early in Yavamos, and it comes up in Ksuvas, and Adarim, and Ida. Okay? And three women who, when they engage in having relations with their husband, does so with contraception. So Kitana Muberes Uminika, a girl, meaning a girl under the age of 12, who for her, the Gemara is going to explain all these, but for her it's going to be too dangerous for her to get pregnant. A woman who's pregnant, where the Gemara, according to one opinion, again, there is a danger set forth in a pregnant woman becoming pregnant again. and Menika and a nursing woman. So these three women, because it's dangerous for them to get pregnant, so therefore they'll have relations with their husband, but they use contraception. So Ketana Shema Tetzabe V'Tamus, the Brisa spells all that out. A Ketana, if she does get pregnant before she's 12, she just simply will not have the physical strength to be able to go through the gestation period. Uber Shema Tetzabe V'Brasandal, a pregnant woman getting pregnant again, which I understand is unlikely, right? Highly unusual, but apparently in the time of the Gemara, it was a concern. And if she does get pregnant again, the second fetus will really encroach on the first fetus. And Meinika Shema Tigmolas Bena. And in terms of a nursing woman, she's going to use contraception, because if she doesn't use contraception, she'll get pregnant again. She'll stop lactating, and her current baby will not have the necessary milk via most, and that baby will die. Veizi Ketana Mibas Achas Asrashanav Yamachad Abashem Asrashanav Yamachad. In terms of the definition of a katana, from 11 to 12 years of age. Pachos Mikana Yosar Kemisham Shiskadark of Olechas Divrem Meir. Below 11, no chance she's going to get pregnant. Above 12, if she gets pregnant, she can handle it. So it's from 11 to 12. And V'chacham Amorim, now it happens to be on this issue, the Chachamim say, Achazim Achazim Hashem Shuskadarka. All these women have relations with their husband with no contraception. And as far as risky behavior, so the Chachamim say, this is acceptable risk. It's allowable risk. Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over fools. Fools, not idiots, by the way. That's, in other words, there's a certain foolishness that we can behave in. But anyway, the point of all this is that either from 11 to 12, you follow a mayor, which is you use contraception, or you follow like the Chachamim, which is it is risky behavior, but it's acceptable risk. And presumably, what the Gemara means by that is that the girl's not going to get pregnant from 11 to 12. Either way, the point of the Gemara is she's not going to get pregnant. How can you say that our Mishnah is talking about Miyun? Miyun, by definition, means she got married sometime before 12 years of age. How could she be mothering a child if she got married at such a young age? So the Gemara says, Mishkach le'bikdushi tasku d'Rav Yehuda mashmor. So the Gemara says, fine, we're going to have to abandon that approach, and the Gemara is going to give now another approach. Maybe our Mishnah is talking about Kiddushi Taos. There was a marriage, but the Kiddushin was done with a mistake. The Amar Rav Yehuda mashmor. A woman who was not raped, meaning she willfully had relations with another man, she is asura, she's prohibited to her husband. That's called adultery. But if she was raped, so she will be muter, she'll be permitted. With exception to a bas kohen, to an eishes kohen, but under most of the time, a woman who's violated, she's an ones, and therefore she is still permitted to her husband. But there is one circumstance where, even if she was not violated, meaning that she willingly had relations with another man, she still will become permitted to. She will not be asura. Where if a woman undergoes kedushin, but the kedushin is betaos, meaning it was made under a false assumption, and then only subsequent to the marriage, the false assumption was discovered. So then that's an annulment of the marriage. An annulment of the marriage because it was the Mekach Taos, it was Kedusha Taos. And even if she has a child produced from that marriage, so the word mian over here, not in the classic sense that we just got done discussing, mema'enis meaning just a refusal, like, eh. In other words, yes, it's true I was with another man, but the Kedushin that I had was Kedusha Taos, and therefore there was no need for a get, therefore it's not Znos, therefore it's not Eishes Ish, and that's what our Mishnah can be describing. Okay. Okay. Again, a number of suggestions in terms of just how to set up our Mishnah, how to line up our Mishnah, and all this to defend Shmuel's halacha, where Shmuel said that if it's that if a Kohen is unable to identify whose father is, he simply does not enjoy the rights and privileges of being a Kohen. Okay. Top of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. Hayu Shneim Kohanim. The Mishnah then entertains a scenario in which the first and the second father are Kohanim. And again, the case is exactly the same case, right? The first husband either died or divorced, right? We can go either way on that issue. We can't do divorce, because then the child may be a chalal. Okay, so the first husband died, or we could say Mion, or we could say Kedushay Taos. Okay, there are a couple ways we can address it, but either way, first she left the first husband. 2 months later, she gets married again. 7 months later, she has a child. But both of her husbands, the first, the former, and the current, are Kohanim. So what do we learn about that case? So we learned about that case in the Mishnah, that he's a Kohen. What about when he's going to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? So the Mishnah said... Well, before we get back to the Mishnah, Tana Rabban, let's just start with the Gemara. We're on the very top of Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Hikazu v'chazav hikazu, kilozev v'chazav v'kilozev, kilshneim v'vatzachas, hikashneim v'vatzachas, chayev. Okay, let's say he hits both of his fathers. Okay, there's a capital crime in the Torah. It's underreported. And that is that a child hitting his father, it's a capital crime. Right, hitting, by the way, not a slap. It has to be a blood inducing wound, but it's a capital crime in the Torah, and so is kilo. So is cursing one's parent as well, also another capital crime. So here in this particular case, he's got two people who he calls dad. Okay, because he doesn't know which one's which. So the Tanakam of this Brisa says that if he hits one and then hits the other, if he curses one and then he curses the other, or if he hits both of them, curses both of them at the same time, or hits them both at the same time, so he will be liable. Meaning, because when all said and done, he hit his father. Now, at the time of the actual hitting, I'm sure you've thought of this already, but just let's speak it out. So how is he going to get warned? Meaning, in order to receive the capital punishment, so you need asra, you need a warning. So what are the witnesses going to come and tell you? Hey, don't hit that man, he may be your father. Okay, that's what's called hasrat safek. That's warning out of doubt. So is that a good warning? So generally speaking, the answer we say to that is no. That's not a good warning. The author of this braisa, the Tana Kama, is of the opinion that it's a good warning. Okay, even though that's generally speaking how we don't hold like that opinion. Back to the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bevasachas Chayev Bezeachas Epater. So Rabbi Yehuda says that if you hit them both simultaneously, so, and he wants to see a funny Rashi. Rashi says, what does that mean you hit them simultaneously? Shechavtem b'makel b'haka achas. Okay, a big stick. Okay, right, got a nice long stick, and the two of them are standing side by side, and you hit them both with that one stick. Okay, so you hit them at the same time. Rabbi Yehuda says, then and only then is one going to be subject to the capital punishment of hitting one's father.
That's your blood, right?
Right, yes. So, b'zeh acher zeh pater. But if it's one after the other, you're going to be exempt. V'atayim rav Yehuda amar pater b'vasachas. And then the Gemara quotes another braisa, and the other braisa says that even if done at the same time, you're going to be exempt. Trei tanai aliba de rav Yehuda. So, the Gemara says, okay, as far as that is concerned, we don't have an elegant answer. There are two Tanaim, each one of them espousing a different viewpoint from Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, but my time of demand depater, I'm Rabbi Chanina, Namar Brach Lamata, and Namar Brach Lamala. My Lamala Sheimbo Shutfus, Af Lamata Sheimbo Shutfus. So the Gemara says like this. It's easy to understand the first opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that if you hit both of them at the same time, you're going to be subject to capital crime. Because look, the witnesses say, I don't know which one your father is, but it's one of those two. One of those men is your father. Okay, fine. And if you hit both of them at the same time, so I don't know what the context is. I don't know what's going on over here, but whatever the circumstances are, if you're hitting both of them at the same time, we know that you're going to be hitting your father, even though I can't identify which one's which. That's a first opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara doesn't even bother explaining it because pasha. Not so pasha, but okay. It's right, more or less obvious. The second opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is that no. Even in such a scenario, that's not a capital crime. And the reason why he explains the Gemara is because of the connection between the Isser and the Torah of hitting one's father, or I should say, let's go from the perspective of cursing. Okay, you'll see why we have to do that. Right, the cursing one's father and cursing a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right. Remember the Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin says, "Gimel Shutfim Ba'adam," that three partners in order to create every man, and that is mom, dad, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, there's the real Holy Trinity, if you will, the one we subscribe to. So so mom, dad, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu are all partners in creating every human being. So the Gemara in Kedushin says that it's not just a nicety. It's not just a nice way to look at it. It has halachic ramifications. Gemara is, and it helps us understand a little bit better, right? You hate your parents. It's a capital crime. Yeah, because they're on par with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You curse your parents, that's a capital crime? Yeah, because they're on par with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara over here says that in this regard, it also creates a halacha to create an exemption, not a liability, but that is the following. Just like there is an absolute unity to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and there's no shutfus, there's no, right, we don't put anything together with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so too when it comes to your father or your mother, the only time cursing is going to be a liability is where you absolutely know who your father is. In this circumstance, there's two men, and even if you're cursing both of them, and even if you're cursing both of them at the same time, but because there's not a single unity of father, it's right now two candidates to your father is, so therefore you're not going to be liable for the death penalty for cursing both of them. So. And what about hitting? Well, hitting is a little trickier, because there's no Isser in the Torah of hitting a Kadosh Baruch Hu, for obvious reasons. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have a Hekesh. We have a connection between cursing and hitting, so just like this halacha is true by cursing, the same halacha is also going to be true by hitting.
Based on this logic, if Hashem already wants to curse Hashem and some other, like, false deity, you could say.
There is a right. The question has become, it's an age old question, whether or not there's any acceptable level of shutfus with the Kadosh Baruch Hu as it relates to, like, let's say for example Avodah Zarah, right? It's an old question. I was just listening, not to plug Wayu Torah, but I'll plug it. I was just listening to a shiur on Wayu Torah about whether Christianity is considered Avodah Zarah. It's predicated on that very issue. It's a good cheer. So the Ola b'mishmaro. Now the v'chimi achar dena cholak lama Ola. So the Gemara wonders. He's not going to get an allocation. So why would he bother growing up? To which the Gemara says, "Are you kidding? Lama Ola, I'm rabina denavid mitzvah." So all right. So I'm not going to get an allocation. I won't get a portion of the karbanos. But I'm a Kohen. I'd like to do the mitzvah of Avodah. That he could do. So, Ella Allah, lo ketani, Ella Ola bakarcho. I'm Rav Acha b'Chanina, I'm Rabbi, I'm Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, mishum b'kam mishpacha. So the Gemara says the reason why he is not encouraged to go up is become of pegam mishpacha. What does that mean, pegam mishpacha? We're worried about the embarrassment of the families. Rashi, so shtei mishpacha sheboshin alav shamer b'nei adam posolhu la'avoda. So the because we actually are going to encourage him to go up and to do the avoda. Again, granted, he's not going to get a portion in the karbanos, but in other words, we don't know who the father is. But both candidates to who the father is they know that they're good kohanim. So from the standpoint of if he doesn't go up and he doesn't do the avodah, so it's going to speak poorly about one of the possible fathers. So I know it's a strange discussion, isn't it? Meaning, think of the behavior of the first father didn't do anything wrong. But think of the behavior of the second father, and we're worried about the Pekam Mishpacha. But again, the idea is that it's not just about him, it's about his entire family. And so if he doesn't go up, and if he doesn't do the Avoda, it's going to speak poorly about the families of both of the fathers. Okay. One more point, and we finish this 11th parak, and that is the Mayushnei b'Mishmar, Mayshna Shnei Mishmar, Zalo Dazal Hai Mishmar Matchilei, Vazal Hai Mishmar Matchilei. Now, if the two fathers are coming from two different mishmaros, remember the system? There are 24 mishmaros amongst the Kohanim. Each one serves a week in the base of Mikdash. In a given year, they're going to be working about 2 weeks in any given year, at least 2 weeks in any given year, in a 48-week rotation. And so what the Mishnah taught us is that if Father A and Father B are coming from two different Mishmaros, so then he's kind of stuck because he can't go up to the Beis Mikdash and receive an allocation from Father A because they're going to say to him, no, you don't belong with us. You're with Father B, and the Father B families are going to say the same thing to him as well. Gemara says, okay, but what if Father A and Father B are from the same Mishmar? So then the Mishnah says, okay, good. He can go up and he can serve during that Mishmar. So the Gemara says, it's a technical issue, but the Gemara is bothered by it. The Gemara says, L'ha Mishmar u'maskele Mishmar achanami azo l'hai beisav u'maskele. So the Gemara says, okay, but even within every Mishmar, it's a further subdivision of six Bati Avos. In other words, how does it work for that 1 week. So that Mishmar is divided into six subunits. Each one works the day of the week, and then on Shabbos, all of them come back together to work together on the Shabbos. So the Gemara over here, it's a technical issue. The Gemara says, even if he belongs to the same Mishmar, could it not be that Father A is from one Beis Av, and Father B is from another Beis Av, and can't they push him off that way as well? Gemara's answer very simple. Amar Papi Achi Kamar Ima Yushtei Mishmar Echad or Beis Av Echad No Tochelak Echad. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're describing is where both Father A and Father B are coming from the same Mishmar, from the same Beis Av. So now he has a total entitlement to be working in the Beis Hamikdash during that week and on that specific day, and that's why he's receiving an entitlement. Hajol Achnos and Alanus, and that is the end of the 11th parak of our Masechta. Yeah, and Yontif, right, correct. And Yontif, every all the Kohanim come and do the Avodah. Okay. Where are we in the Masechta? We are about to begin the 12th Perek of the Masechta. 12th Perek takes us from here until Kovav. Okay, so it's a week of the 12th Perek. We go back now to the Mitzvah of Yibum. Although we really finished talking about the Mitzvah of Yibum, but what's left to discuss, that's Chalitza. Okay. In the event that he decides that this he's not interested for whatever reason, so and he does not want to do the mitzvah of Yibum, so in order to release her, so he has to do what's called chalitza. Okay, chalitza is made up. The mitzvah of chalitza is made up of three components. We're going to be discussing over the course of this next week of the daf exactly what chalitza entails. But the first point that we're going to be discussing in the Mishnah is the more broader point, and that is who do you have to do chalitza in front of. Meaning it is a judicial process, and therefore it needs to be done in front of, and in front of what? Says the Mishnah, mitzvah chalitza b'shlosha dayanim. So the mitzvah of chalitza needs to be done in front of three judges. Ve'afilu shlosha edyotos. Now they don't have to be expert judges, right? In other words, the mumche term that we see throughout the Gemara is a term that describes describes expert judges, and they have smicha. In other words, they have some sort of... Now, ordination is not really the right word to describe smicha as it relates to Beis Din. It has to do with the fact that they were given a confirmation by someone who was given a confirmation by someone going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? So the Mishnah says that the mitzvah of chalitza should be done in front of three, and even if those three are not mumchim, they're not experts, they have to have a requisite amount of information and knowledge base in order to serve on this court, as we will be discussing in the Gemara, but it needs to be done in front of three. So v'afilu shloshtan hadyotos chalza b'mino. And now from this point going forward, the Mishnah is going to be discussing the shoe. Okay, one of the aspects of chalitza, the one that we're all familiar with, is that there is a shoe required. Okay, there is. It's important to see some sort of picture of it. There basically are going to be two things that we're going to be describing over here in our Gemara, and that is something called a min'al versus something called a sandal. Okay, sandal, like the English word sandal, kishmo kachu. It's a sandal. It's a very hard leather. It's not cooked. It's not boiled. It's not soft. Not like the leather shoes that we wear. Leather shoes that we wear are very soft. The sandalim, kind of like the sandal that you see nowadays, very hard and stiff leather. And in order to get it on, it needs a number of straps in order to get them onto your feet. Masha inkin a minal shoe, so a shoe is a soft leather shoe. Says the Mishnah, chalitza b'mina chalitza sukshera. If you do chalitza with a minal, so it's okay. What do you get? What sense do you get from the Mishnah? Pretty easy to read into the Mishnah. It's not the best. It's not the best to use a minal. The best is to use a sandal for reasons which we're going to explain in the Gemara. But the Mishnah acknowledges that if you use a minal, it's not possible. It's not disqualified. Be'an palya chalitza sepsula. But if you use socks, right? Phil, even I recognize the word that Rashi uses to describe the socks, right? Calzon. Right, and it's like pants in Spanish. Calzon seizure. Okay, anyway. So the, fine. So the anpaya chalitzas apsula. So if it's socks, so that's no good. Meaning socks are out of the question. Why are socks out of the question? So if you take a look at Rashi writes, because the definition of shoe is something that protects your foot. meaning it allows you to walk on any surface and it protects your foot. Rashi quotes the pasuk from Yechezkel that the definition of shoe is megid. It protects you. So the sock that you wear is not considered a shoe. It does not qualify as a shoe at all, and therefore will not be an effective chalitza if you use chalitza with a sock. If the sandal has literally a heel, but Rashi over here says it's describing a sole. If it has a sole, so then that's fine. But if it doesn't have a sole, that's no good. What if the yavam in question is amputated? So he has but just a stub on his leg. So is he eligible to do chalitza? So if the stub goes below the knee, so then yes. In other words, you'll strap a shoe or a sandal onto that. What's that called?
Stump.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you'll strap on a shoe or a sole or a sandal onto the stump, and that will serve as a good chalitza. But if the stump only, if the stump doesn't even make it down to the knee, so then it's no good. I understand that. You can ask me then, what's she going to do if there's no avenue of chalitza? So I'll say that there may be another surviving brother, or at this point in time, maybe she is stuck with the mitzvah vibum. Okay. Chalitza b'sandal she'en shalo, o b'sandal shal etz, o b'shal smol b'yamin, chalitza k'shera. Then the Mishnah rattles off three occasions where it's not the best chalitza, but it'll work. If he uses a shoe that does not belong to him, or a shoe made out of wood, or he takes the left shoe and puts it on his right foot, so b'di'evit it works in all three of these cases. Chalta begadol shu yachol ha'aloch bo, if let's say the shoe doesn't fit, let's say it's just too big for him, as long as he could still walk in such a shoe, o b'katzen shu chofetz rav aglo, or let's say it is a shoe that's too small, but at least it covers the majority of his foot, chalitza sokshera, again, not the best, but b'di'evit it would work.
Can the
yavam
point a shliach to do chalitza for him?
It sounds like it's a mitzvah shebegufo. It's right. It's like tefillin, where I cannot appoint a shliach to put on tefillin for me. It's a mitzvah shebegufo. So I absolutely get that impression from the Mishnah. Starting with the Gemara Me'achar. Okay, so the Mishnah is a little funny. The Mishnah says any three are acceptable, but make sure it's a beis din. And why did the Mishnah say that? Just simply say three. So Hakamash one, Dayanim. So the Gemara says the reason why the Mishnah made that added those extra words is to tell us that even though it doesn't have to be a Beis Din per se, where they are Dayanim Mumchim, but still the members of this panel have to have a requisite amount of information. And that requisite amount of information is that they have to be able to read Hebrew. And the reason why they have to read Hebrew is because they're going to be a makri. You know, like on Rosh Hashanah, you have someone telling the Baal Tokeah what to do. He's called the makri, right? And he announces, here's what you do, and then the Baal Tokeah hopefully does it. So here, by the chalitza, same thing. The Beis Din is going to tell her what to do. So obviously, in instruction, they have to know Hebrew. So the Gemara says, "Tanila had the Tanur Rabban." The Gemara quotes Braisa. Braisa is going to make the same exact point. Mitzvah chalitza b'shosha shiyonin la'akros ke'in dayanim, similar to that of dayanim. Meaning, again, we're using the word based in loosely over here, but we're using it just to give an indication that they have to know how to read Hebrew. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha, and then we quote in this Braisa there is a divergent opinion, which is that not three but five. You need five dayanim. Okay, so my time d'tanakama. So the Gemara says, why does the Tanakhama say three? D'tanya, zekeinim shnayim ve'ein based in shakol. So the Torah, when describing the elders involved in the chalitza, called them zekeinim. Again, the minimum of plural is two, and we know that whenever you have a beis din cannot be an even number. So mosifin alei moda chadarei kan shlosha. So you add one more, you get to three, and that's the source of the Tanakhama's viewpoint, which is that you need three. Rav Yehuda Omer ziknei shnayim, zekeinim shnayim. Go through the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, describing chalitza. You will see the word zikanim not used once, but twice. You'll see zikanim and you'll see ziknei. Truth of the matter is, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says there's actually a third reference to the word zikanim. It's hazikanim, right? Le'enei hazikanim. But Rashi points out that no one's going to count that, because that's clearly in context talking about the elders that we already referenced once earlier. but it's mentioned twice. Ein based, so that brings us now 2 plus 2 is 4. So the ein based in shakul mosif and alem or the chadere kanhe. So and you can't have 4 because 4 is an even number. So you add one more, you get to 5. All right. And now the Gemara is going to go through its classic ping pong. So what we're going to do now is we have a drasha for the Tana Kama, we have a drasha for Rabbi Yehuda, and we're going to go back and forth, bouncing back and forth. What is each going to do with each other's drasha? The Tana Kama Zikne Mai Avile. So what did the Tana do with the extra Zikne? Mi Baile Le Ribuy Afilu Shoshe Jotos comes to tell me that even 3 had yotos. The Rabbi Yehuda had yotos manale. Now Rabbi Yehuda, who doesn't have an extra limud, how does he know that they don't have to be mumchim? Nafkalei mila enei. Damamar leenei prat lesumim. So we have a drasha, and the drasha says that these judges cannot be blind. Now the Gemara says, interesting, they can't be blind. That's always true when it comes to judges. So the Gemara says, look, if there was a requirement that they be a regular Beis Din, that is an accepted halacha already, that a regular Beis Din cannot be blind. Justice is blind, but the justices themselves cannot be blind. I mean, Dini Rav Yosef, Nafka, Dini Rav Yosef was taught in the yeshiva of Rav Yosef. I also sense that irony, that Rav Yosef was blind. But okay, but... No, he was correct. Didn't he, Rav Yosef? So just like they have to be as righteous as possible, they also have to be as physically acceptable as possible. Which Shenamar, and the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Shir Shirim. So Kulach Yafer Ragasi, Omomein Bach. Right, no blemishes, no physical blemishes. So so Rav Yehuda's argument goes like this. If the requirement was that they are, this is a real Beis Din, I don't need a special drasha to tell me that they can't be blind. The basic halacha of a Beis Din is that they can't be blind. The fact that there's an extra drasha by the members of the panel of Chalitza tells me that it's not a Beis Din. So v'idach, hahu leinei my avid lei. So back to the Tana Kama, what does he do with the word leinei? Hahu lechadrav udasad amarav tzricha dayan lemechzei roka dekanafik mipumadi avama dechsev leinei hazekenim viraka. They have to actually see the spit coming out of the mouth of the woman. The woman is going to spit. That's another part of the chalitza procedure, which we haven't discussed yet. We're going to discuss it later. Perhaps one of the largest misconceptions, she spits into the shoe. It's not true. We'll talk about that later. But in other words, she needs to spit in his general direction. And it's not ceremonial. I mean, it is meaning it's part of the ceremony. But in other words, the spit is a halachic requirement. And the zakenim have to actually see the spit come out of her mouth. And so that's what they do with the word le'enei. So v'idach nami mebay le'lechadarav e'nachanami. Now the Gemara says, back to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, don't you agree with that drasha? The Gemara says, yeah, he does. So v'elei hajotos menale, back to square one. Where does Rabbi Yehuda know that this basin does not have to be mumcha? So nafka mebi Yisrael. Yisrael called to who? So the Torah says, right, the pasuk says, be Yisrael, meaning any Jew. Doesn't have to be an expert. So v'ira chay Yisrael my avile, back to the Tana Kama, what does he do with Yisrael? Mi ba'ile lechadidni Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda b'Yisrael be'beisin shal Yisrael v'lo be'beisin shal gerim. The members of this particular court who are presiding over the chalitza cannot be gerim. Cannot be converts. Ve'idach b'Yisrael achrin ksiv. So now back to Rav Yehuda. Where does he know that halacha from? It's a halacha that he agrees to. There's another Yisrael. Ve'idach mibay lelech d'tanya. Back to the Tana Kama. What does he do with that extra Yisrael? He learns another halacha. I'm Rav Yehuda. Pamachas heinu yoshim lefnei Rabbi Tarfon. Abay Yavam lachlotz. So we were by Rabbi Tarfon, and along comes the Yavam, and chalitza is about to happen. Va'amar lanu anu kulchem chalutz anal. So, and there has to be a proclamation said, and the proclamation is chalutz anal, meaning that there's a component of the chalitza process where there's a response of everybody. Everybody needs to say chalutz anal, that the shoe has been removed. It's part of the affirmation / confirmation that chalitza was done. And that's what they learned from the extra B'Yisrael. V'idach, back to Rav Yehuda, how does he know that halacha? Me v'nikra nafka. So he learns it out from the pasuk of v'nikra. Okay, and oddly enough, the Gemara stops over here. That's a lot of ping pong. Okay, hopefully we're able to follow the match. But the Okay, so, but again, it comes out now that according to the Tanakhama, based in a 3, according to Rav Yehuda, based in a 5, and drushas and what to do with each other's drushas. So the Gemara says, you know, there are verbs in the Torah by the Chalitza that give us the indication that it, you're going to add another 4. The Pasuk says, Vikaru, the Pasuk says, Vidibru. And aren't we going to add another 4? So that means according to Rav Yehuda, 5 plus 4, that's 9. According to the Tanakhama, 3 plus 4, that's 7. So the Gemara says, no. Ha'omi ba'ile lechid detanya. V'karu lo v'lo shluchim v'dibro ayla v'la mishem ma'sin lo etza hogenes. V'karu lo means that they have to call out to him directly. There has to be a direct communication between the Beis Din and the one doing the chalitza. And the dibor Allah malam shem asin lo etzah ogenas. And the dibor, that is just good old fashioned good advice, which is again, we don't have control of the shidduch. This shidduch is strictly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you can get very religious about it. Well, if it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to go forward. Or you can also be a little bit practical and a little bit sensible about it, which is, he may be, let's say, of an older generation, and she may be, let's say, 18. Right? So, and it would make for a strange union. And we saw this already early in the Masechta, second time we're seeing this. And Beis Din should step in. And Beis Din should intervene. And Beis Din should give good advice. Shema Yahu Yala Vihi Zekena. Hu Zaken Vihi Alda. Omrim Lo, Malach Etzo Yalda. Malach Etzo Zekena, Klach Etzo Shekamozcha. Right? Part of the good Shidduch is that they're of the same age. They're of the same general age. Al Tachnis Ketata L'toch Beisecha. Because you married somebody who's too old for you, too young for you. So that's a recipe for disaster, the Gemara says. And that's just, it's just not going to be good. It won't go well.
Is this advice or is it
convincing? It's advice. The Gemara puts it under the category of advice. Again, they
cannot.
Right. They no. It's not. No. It's not Makanos Acha Omerotzan. He's just simply. It's we're providing now good sound advice. Okay, halacha. Amar Rav Nachman halacha chalitza b'shlosha. Ho v'stam lantana kavasei. We have a Mishnah here in Yevamos, the 12th parak of Yevamos. The opening words of the 12th parak are, Chalitza needs to be done in 3. Now, even though Rav Yehuda disagrees, and Rav Yehuda says 5, but that's not the halacha. Halacha is 3. Amle Rav L'Rav Nachman Yachem Yonami, did not Amin V'Chalitza B'Shlosha. So the Gemara says, okay, what about Miyun? Miyun also needs to be done in 3, right? There's a Stam Mishnah. So the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin, V'Chitem Achanami V'Atanya. So the Gemara says, okay, so what are you arguing? Maybe you're right. The Gemara says you're not right. Mian Beit Shammai Omrin Beis Din Mumchin Beis Hillel Omrin Beis Din Ushala Be Beis Din. Mian can be done according to Beis Hillel, either with or without a Beis Din. Eilav Eilamo Dushetzarch Shlosha Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Rav Elazar Rav Yosi Machshirim B'Shnayim. And Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda together with Rav Elazar says that when you're doing Mian, the procedure of Mian, it needs to be done only in front of 2. V'Amar Rav Yosef Bar Minyomi Amar Rav Nachman Halacha Koso Zug, and that's the halacha. Mian is done with 2. Contrary to the fact that there's a Stam Mishnah that says the Mian's done with 3, but the Halacha is done, that Mian's done with 2. So, the question is, if we have a Stam Mishnah that says Mian's done with 3, and meanwhile the Halacha is 2, so it shouldn't shock the world if we have a Stam Mishnah that says that Chalitza's with 3, and maybe the Halacha doesn't follow the Stam Mishnah. The Gemara says, Asam Chad Stama V'Acha Shrei Stame. So the Gemara says, yeah, but look at how many Stam Mishnahs there are. There's a Stam Mishnah here in Yevamos. There's a Stam Mishnah in the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Both saying Chalitza are done with 3. That's 2 Stam Mishnahs. So the Gemara says, Asam Nami Shrei Stame Ninu Did Nan Mi'ano Shechatza B'Fanav Yisayim B'Nei Shu B'Beis Din. Gemara says, okay, but when it comes to Mian, I also have 2 Stam Mishnahs. The Gemara says, Ela Hasam Trei Stami, Hachat Lasa Stami. So the Gemara says, yeah, but here when it relates to Chalitza, we have 3 Stam Mishnahs. The Gemara says, that's exciting. Michze, the Gemara says, it's not exciting. Ha Stam Ava, Stam Amali, Chat Stam Ali, Trei Stam. Gemara says, what's the difference? Stam Mishnah just simply means, Revi Yehuda Anasi, when penning down the Mishnah, puts this down as an anonymous position, because he believes that that's the authoritative halacha. Mali Talasa, what difference? 2, 3, doesn't matter. Elam Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Hol V'Stam B'Makom Machlokes. So the Gemara says, yeah, but take a look at that Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And the context really speaks to the idea that this is a halacha. What does the Mishnah over there say? This is, again, the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Smicha Zekein V'Egla Rufa B'Shlosha Div Rav Yosi. Rav Yehuda Amar B'Chamisha. When it comes to performing Smicha, or the procedure of Egla Rufa, Machlokes, whether you need 3 or 5 judges. serious. Ha chalitza veha miunin bishlosha. But when you're doing chalitza or miun, three. See what happened in that Mishnah? There was a debate, and then there was a consensus as it relates to chalitza. V'lo kapalik Rav Yehuda shmamina, debe Rav Yehuda shmamina. So you see that Rav Yehuda, over there in that Mishnah, capitulated to the idea that chalitza is done in front of three. If I were to ask you right now at this juncture, so how many do you need for chalitza? So you would say, like the Gemara just got done saying, you would need three. But come back tomorrow and you'll see that the number is going to jump back up to five for reasons which we're going to explain tomorrow.